Chapter 44. After congratulating Logan a few more times, Kylar had excused himself to let the young Duke speak with his father-in-law-to-be. Sera was in the back of the house getting changed, and they had agreed that she probably shouldn't see Logan and Kylar being friendly until after the wedding. "I'll understand if I'm not invited," Kylar had said. "But if you ever do tell her, I'll expect an apology. Congratulations." He climbed up the stairs to his room, pitched his tunic in a corner, and stared into the looking glass. "And congratulations to you. Your master is going to kill you, and all the women in your life hate you." Next to the mirror, he noticed a bundle of letters bound together with a ribbon. He picked it up. Scrawled on a scrap of paper in Blint's hand was a note. "Since you've crossed the line, I guess there's no reason to hide these from you anymore." "What?" Kylar untied the ribbon and read the first letter. It had been written by a child, all big letters and disconnected thoughts. "Thank you so much. I love it here. You are great. It is my birthday today. I love you, Eileen." An adult had written below that. "Sorry, Count Drake. She overheard us talking about her lord and benefactor. She's been wanting to write this letter since we started teaching her how to write. She wouldn't let go of the idea once she got a hold of it. Tell us if we shouldn't let her write no more. Humbly yours, Gare Cromwell." Kylar was spellbound. There was a letter for each year, each getting longer, the handwriting better. He felt like he was watching Eileen grow up before his eyes. She, too, had changed her name, but there was no denial in her of what she had been, no divorce from her previous weakness and vulnerability.
"When she was 15, she wrote, 'Paul asked if I get mad because my face got cut up. He said it's not fair. I said it's not fair that I got out of the Warrens while so many others never did. Look at everything I've got. And it's all because of you.'"
Kylar had to flip through the letters, just skimming them. He was living on borrowed time. Sooner or later, word would arrive about the prince's death. And damn, the girl could write a lot. He flipped to the last letter. It was dated just a few days ago.
"You don't know what you've done for me. I've told you about all the ways your money has saved my family, especially when my adoptive father died. But you've done more than that. Just knowing that somewhere out there, there's a young lord who cares about me. Me, a slave-born girl with a scarred face, has made all the difference. You've made me feel special.
Paul proposed to me last week." Kylar had a sudden impulse to find this Paul and kick his ass. "I would have said yes, even though I hate his temper and other things, too.
The point is, just that you're out there, caring about me, makes me believe that I'm worth more than a lousy marriage to the first man who will propose to a scarred girl. It gives me faith that God has something better for me."
"Oh, she's a God person. Great. So that was how she knew the Drakes."
"Thank you. And sorry about my last letter. I'm totally mortified by what I wrote. Please, ignore everything I said."
"Huh?"
Kylar turned back to the last letter and couldn't help grinning. Eileen had been deep in the throes of full-blown 16-year-old girl romanticism. "I think I'm in love with you. In fact, I'm sure of it. Last year, when I went to Count Drake's to drop off my letter, Mother finally lets me do a few things by myself. I think I saw you. Maybe it wasn't you. But it could have been you. There's a boy there, a young lord like you. He's so handsome and they totally love him. I mean, you can just tell how much everyone thinks of him, even Count Drake. I mean, I know he's not really you because he's not rich like you are, because his family is poor, he lives with the Drakes. Kylar's breath caught. Eline had seen him. She had seen him a year ago, and she thought he was handsome. She thought he was handsome? But what does money matter when you have love? There were... No. Yes, there were tear splotches on the page. Well, Kylar had grown up around three girls. It didn't totally surprise him. He just wondered when Eline had started crying. So, since you're the strong silent type and you never write back to my letters, I've decided I'm going to call you Kylar. And this next line she crossed out. I suppose you might be fat and ugly and have a big nose and... I am so sorry. I should start over, but Mother says I already use too much paper as it is. I'm sorry. I am a total brat. But can't you write back to me even once? Have Count Drake give it to me next year when I drop off my letter. Paul says I'm not infatuated with a man. I'm infatuated with a bag of money. Eline didn't know anything about him, but hey, she'd been barely 16, and Kylar still wanted to kick Paul's ass. But I'm not, and it's not infatuation. I love you, Kylar. A chill washed through him at those words. How he wanted to hear those words. How he wanted to hear them from her. And here they were. Here they were in knots and knots of his duplicity. She said all those words to him, not thinking he was he, not knowing Count Drake gave her letters to Durzo, not knowing Kylar really was her young benefactor, not knowing Kylar was really Azoth, not knowing Kylar was a killer, not knowing that, for that one time she'd seen him, that he had seen her hundreds of times twice every week, whenever he could make it, in the market off Sidlin Way. He watched her grow up in that market, told himself 1,000 times that next week he wouldn't go and try to catch a glimpse of her, and always succumbed. He'd watched from afar, and come to have his own infatuation, hadn't he? He'd told himself that she was just forbidden fruit, that was all that appealed to him about her. He'd told himself he just wanted to see that she was well. When that didn't work, he told himself that it would pass. He was 20 years old now, and he was still waiting for it to pass. His sudden hope, she'd been infatuated with him, hit reality like Gandhian porcelain hitting the floor. The delicate tracery of thin possibilities smashed. Now the stricken look on her face yesterday made more sense. The revelations that could have been so poignant for her. I am Kylar, and Azoth, and your young lord, and I love you too, had hit her like a sledgehammer instead. I am Kylar, and Azoth, and your young lord, and a murderer. Help me. Give me your trust, so I can betray it. There wasn't time for self-pity, and Kylar had already indulged in too much of it. He'd left behind a witness who knew he was a wet boy, and who knew he was Kylar Stern, and who believed him guilty of stealing the Globe of Edges, if not worse. So he'd quite possibly thrown away an identity he'd spent 10 years building for a little ball that he hadn't even kept. The buckets of hot water that the maid usually put in his room in the morning were empty. For some reason, that set him off. He felt his eyes getting hot and tears threatening. It was so ridiculous he almost laughed. Those empty buckets were the smallest inconvenience, but it was like the gods, or Drake's one god, wanted to crush him. Everything that could go wrong had. Master Blint was going to kill him. The woman he was trading his life to save hated him. Even Cyra Drake, who had been unsure about whether she loved him or Logan just last night, now hated him. The worst part of it was that it was all his fault. Everything that had gone wrong because of decisions he had made. Well, at least the empty buckets weren't his fault. Kylar grabbed the buckets and walked down the hall. He ran into the maid coming up the stairs with two buckets full of steaming water. "Hello," he said. He didn't recognize her, but she was prettier than most of the girls Mistress Bronwyn hired.
"Hello. I'm so sorry I'm late. It's my first day, and I don't know where to find everything. I'm really sorry," she said.
She squeezed past him, and Kylar couldn't help but notice her large breasts gliding across his bare chest. She disappeared into his room, and he followed. "I can take those if you..."
"You aren't mad, are you?" she asked. "Please don't tell Count Drake or Mistress Bronwyn that I was late. I don't think she likes me, and if I mess up on my first day, I'm sure she'll throw me out. And I need this job ever so bad, sir."
She had set down the buckets, and she was wringing her hands.
"Whoa," Kylar said. "Relax. I'm not mad. I'm Kylar." He extended a hand and a smile.
She seemed to warm instantly. She smiled and took his hand. Her eyes flicked briefly over his bare chest and stomach. Briefly, but appreciatively.
"Hello. I'm Viridiana."
The porter showed a handsome Ladeshian man into the den. Logan had stepped out to grab something to eat from the kitchen, so Count Drake was alone.
"Sir," the porter said, "he insisted that he must deliver a message in person."
"Very well, thank you," Count Drake said. The Ladeshian had such presence that it seemed odd for him to be acting as a messenger. He looked rather like a courtier, or a bard. He was holding something in his hand that took all Count Drake's attention away from the man. It was an arrow. Its entire length, including steel head and feathers, had been painted a glossy red, the color of fresh blood.
As soon as the porter stepped out, the man said,
"Good morning, my lord. I wish our meeting could be under different circumstances, but I'm afraid my message is quite important. This comes from Durzo Blint," he said. "If he's still alive, give this to the boy, and tell him to meet me for dinner at the Tipsy Tart."
The man bowed and presented the red arrow to the count. From the doorway, Logan laughed.
"If he's still alive? I guess one of Kylar's friends saw me coming here this morning, huh?"
Count Drake chuckled.
"I'm sure you scared everyone who saw you."
He turned to the messenger.
"I'll give it to him.
Thank you."
"My lord,"
the Ladeshian said, turning to Logan, "we mourn your loss."
He bowed again and walked out. Logan shook his head.
Was that a bachelor joke?
"I don't know. I visited Ladesh once and never did understand their humor. Maybe I should take this upstairs."
Here I thought we were about to have the big father-son dialectic about marital intimacies.
Count Drake smiled.
"You put it so primly."
"Sira's pretty prim," Logan said.
"Believe me, there's nothing prim about marital intimacies, Logan."
Count Drake looked at the arrow in his hand and put it aside.
"Well, the first thing you have to understand about lovemaking is..."
Viridiana rubbed her shoulder and said, "It's so nice to see someone nice. I thought this place was going to be awful to work at after how mean Mistress Bronwyn was. You don't mind, do you?"
"No, not at all," Kylar said, not really sure what he was not minding, but sure that he wasn't supposed to. As if it were the most natural thing in the world, Viridiana untied the laces of her bodice, which Kylar had already noticed was unusually tight.
"Oh, that's better,"
she said, drawing a deep breath. She closed and locked the door, and then walked over to the buckets, peeling off her bodice and dropping it.
Kylar said,
Then Viridiana bent over to pick up the water buckets again. She must have had 6 feet of cleavage because Kylar was totally lost in it. His mouth opened, but no words came out. It was with an unseemly amount of effort that he pulled his eyes up. Viridiana was watching him, and even as his face got hot, he saw that she was anything but displeased. With a deft twist, she released her tightly bound hair, and it cascaded around her face in long curls.
"Are you ready for your bath, my lord?"
"No, I mean,
"You want to bathe after?"
she said, walking forward. She reached behind her back and started opening buttons.
"After?"
Kylar stepped back, but his resistance was crumbling. "Why not? What the hell have I been waiting for? For Aline?" Viridiana filled his vision. Full lips, gorgeous hair that he could practically feel already in his fingertips, on his chest. Those breasts, those hips. And she wanted him. It would be sex, just sex, not lovemaking. Not some grand expression of romance and commitment, just passion. Simpler. More like Mama Kay's version of things. Less like Count Drake's version. But damn, her body was more persuasive than a room full of scholars. His calves hit his bed, and he almost fell. I don't really feel very comf... Her hand came up to his chest, and then she slammed it into him. He was falling back as her other hand came up from behind her dress in a glimmering metallic arc. By the time his back hit the bed, she was straddling him, her knees pinning his arms to his sides, one hand grabbing his hair, the other pressing the knife to his neck. "Comfortable?" she asked, finishing his sentence. She wasn't kidding with the knife. It was pressed against the side of his neck, just at the point where a little pressure would break the skin, and it was poised over an artery. As his lungs filled with gasps of air, he had to try not to move his neck. "Ah, shit," he said. "You're Hugh Gibbet's apprentice, Vi, Viridiana." "Vi. How'd I miss it?" She smiled joylessly. "Who are you working for? The prince was my debtor." "Seriously? How embarrassing. To be taken in by another wet boy. Or are you a wet girl?" "Not the way you're hoping." She ground her hips against him, and he blushed. She pinched his cheek. "You aren't too ugly, you know. It'll be a shame to kill you." "The shame's all mine, I assure you."
"Don't feel bad," she said. "Part of my talent is a glamour. It's to your credit you weren't actually drooling."
"You mean those are an illusion?" "Move your hands and die," she said. "The body's real." "Thanks." "I should say thank you, but this knife at my throat is muting my appreciation some."
"If you're trying for charm, you're way out of this. You need practice."
"Who are you working for?"
"You're working for the king," Kylar said.
"Aren't you?"
"Backbone," she said. "I like that."
"Wetting myself would be awfully messy for both of us," Kylar said.
She chuckled, and he smiled as charmingly as he could.
"Was that better?"
"Better. I'll give you one for effort. I took this job for the king. He was a little peeved that you killed his son, so I take his money. But I take my orders from Roth. Last chance now." She pressed the knife a little further into his skin, and he had to lean his head as far to the side as he could to keep it from cutting him.
"Maybe you can appreciate my dilemma," Kylar said, straining his neck. "If I don't answer, you'll kill me painfully, but it will take a while. If I do answer, you'll kill me quickly, but soon.
Or you can try to string this out for as long as you can and hope someone saves you. You're smart,
I suppose you'd have to be. We've all been curious why Blint would choose an apprentice without the talent. I guess smart wins it.
You all? You've been taking bets on me? Wait, they say I don't have the talent?
Like they say, there are no secrets worth knowing in the Sakage, Vi said. So you aren't going to tell me who you were working for, are you? Probably just another one sent by Roth. When he wants a job done, he makes sure it gets done. There's even a rumor he got Lady Jadwin to do it, but I know a wet boy's work when I see it.
You're kind of chatty, aren't you? Kylar said.
If he had a hand free, he would have slapped himself. Note, when attempting to buy time, do not criticize the prolixity of your captor. Her beautiful face turned ugly for half a second, and Kylar saw the Hugh gibbet in her. Then she smiled, but Hugh didn't leave her eyes.
In the next life, she said, work on that charm.
The next feeling would be the glide of a knife, the flesh of his neck parting. Warmth. Kylar's muscles bunched with need and desperation. There was a knock on the door.
Kylar,
the Count said. Vi flinched and turned her head. Kylar threw his head to the side and bucked, trying to throw her off. Or that's what he told his body to do. Instead, he felt energy pouring through him like lightning on a leash. A brief euphoria, power swelling through him. Well-being as if he'd been sick his entire life and now felt health for the first time. It was the talent that Durzo had always said he had. And now, it was his. Vi flew into the air, but she held on to Kylar's hair, and one of her legs got tangled with one of his. So instead of flying off him, she flew up, and then crashed back down on top of him. She tried to slash him, but both of his hands were up now, and he caught both of her arms and rolled. They fell off the bed, and he landed on her. She grunted and raised a knee between his legs. It was like the sun exploding in his pants. He groaned, and it was all he could do not to let go of her hands as she rolled on top of him.
Kylar, the Count shouted through the door. Do you have a lady in there?
I wouldn't call her a lady.
Kylar's stones hurt so bad he could barely move, much less fight.
Help!
You're pathetic, she said. He could only grunt. She launched herself off of him. He struggled to his feet as the door burst open, but he was too slow. She was already throwing her knife at Count Drake. The Count threw himself to the side, and the knife sailed past him harmlessly. Instantly, he had a throwing knife in his own hand, but he hesitated. Vi saw his hand raised and leaped for the window. Kylar grabbed the knife from the Count's hand and threw it as Vi disappeared through the window. He thought he saw it sink into her shoulder. He grabbed the sword that was secreted under his bed, but when he looked out the window, she was gone. The Count looked shaken. He was holding a red arrow in his other hand.
I hesitated, he said.
From anyone else, it would have been a concession of defeat. But Count Drake sounded victorious.
After all these years, I wondered. But it's true. I really have changed. Thank you, God.
Kylar looked at him strangely.
What are you talking about?
Kylar, we have to talk.